We can start. Yes. You can share your screen, Abby. Hello, everybody. Welcome for this unusual time, unusual date cafe club this week. The speaker is based in New York. That's the reason of the timing. Abby, I think that most of all of you know Abby, who did who completed a PhD already a couple of years ago, almost, at LAM, working with Gilead. And since then in New York City, or at home in India because of pandemic. He's talk today. Please do not hesitate to interrupt him at any time for questions. Have you know the rules? Welcome. Go ahead.
All right. Thanks, Carlo, for the intro. I'm Abhishek Maniar. I'm a postdoc at NYU, Center for Cosmology of Particle Physics of the NYU. And as Carlo said, I did my PhD at LAM a couple of years ago, around this time. So it's good to be back in a way, even though it's virtually, someday in person. So today I would like to tell you a bit about a couple of papers I did during these last 2 years. They are in the field of weak lensing, and one of them will be about this globally optimal estimator, and the other one will be a new probe of high redshift linears. So please feel free to interrupt me whenever you want. So let's get to it. So the first paper is about the weak lensing globally optimal estimator. And this was done in collaboration with TSC in Ali Haimud at NYU, and then Julian Caron, Anthony Lewis, and Matt Mathur-Sherrill. So if there is someone in the audience who doesn't know what the weak lensing of the CMB is, so CMB is coming towards us from the last scattering surface. So we are here somewhere, and the CMB is coming from here, let's imagine. So the photons of the CMB on the way towards us, they get deflected. And why does that happen? Because there is a lot of matter distribution between us and the last scattering surface. And that matter distribution deflects these photons. So what we actually see is not the real map of the CMB, how it was emitted at the last scattering surface, but it's this distorted map because of this lensing effect. And now the trick here is, because we know statistical properties of how the CMB should be on the last scattering surface, and now we know the scattering statistical properties of the distorted map which we observe, we can compare these two maps and then reconstruct all the matter distribution in the universe. So this is a really cool tool, and this is what is called the reconstruction of the density field with lensing. So what it does, for example, when CMB starts from here and comes towards us at redshift zero, when we do this reconstruction of lensing, what we do reconstruction of is this something called kappa field, which is the projected mass density. And it's the shape of this kappa kernel looks like this. And what it basically does is it reconstructs all the mass between the last scattering surface and at redshift zero, and it projects it. It's a projected matter map. So this is a major cosmology goal for the upcoming CMB experiments. And I just want to clarify that in the CMB lensing field, kappa and something called phi, which is lensing potential, are used interchangeably. So I'll do the same. Sometimes I'll say kappa, sometimes I'll say phi. That's basically CMB lensing. And is it possible to do this? Has this been done in practice? So yes, it has been done. It has been shown to work. So this is the Planck, this is the lensing reconstruction map from the Planck experiment from 2018 results. And I really like this map because this basically shows you all the matter content in the universe from us to the last scattering surface projected onto this map. So this is really cool. Now how is this done, this lensing reconstruction? That's where the quadratic estimators enter. And there are going to be some equations on this slide. So I'm sorry about that, but you don't have to really, you won't really have to get into details of those, but I'll try to give the gist of what's happening. So let's imagine there were no lensing in the universe. So there is no lensing, and you observe the CMBs. You observe in the temperature, E mode polarization, and B mode polarization. And now if you were to take their the cross correlation, if you were to correlate two different multiples of these maps, let's say temperature and polarization, or even temperature, you would see that if there is no lensing, different multiples are uncorrelated. You get this Dirac delta function and this power spectrum. So different multiples are uncorrelated. But what lensing does is it gives you this term, first of all, the normal power spectrum term, but then it gives you this additional term. When you correlate different multiples, it gives you this extra term. Now this extra term, as you can see, is dependent on these multiples L and L prime. So what lensing does, it correlates, it induces these correlations between different multiples. And here again, as I said, X can be anything T, E or B, and you can get all the pairs of combinations of T, E and B. So these pairs here, which I have written as alpha. So now if you look at this equation carefully, you can see that if I take this F alpha on the left-hand side, what I'm left with on the right-hand side is the phi of L, just the lensing potential, which I was talking about before. So in a way, this gives us an intuitive hint that if I take these pairs of multiples, different pairs of multiples, give them some weight when I take this F alpha on this side, give them some weight and take an appropriate average over these weights and these multiples, I can potentially reconstruct phi with some noise. And because this reconstruction is never perfect. And because I'm using these pairs of multiples to reconstruct the lensing field, this is called a quadratic estimator because we are using a pair. You see, so basically what it says is the phi of L can be reconstructed with a couple of multiples with some weights and averaging over them. All right, so that's the basic concept of quadratic estimators. There are several quadratic estimators in the CMB weak lensing field, and many more have been proposed, but these are the four major ones. Out of these four, something we call suboptimal quadratic estimator, SQE, is used in the final data analysis, for example, in the Planck and SPT data. But today, due to lack of time, I'll only talk about Huan Okamoto, the classic Huan Okamoto estimator, which was the first CMB estimator proposed, quadratic estimator proposed, and something called global minimum variance estimator, GMV, which we proposed in our paper. All right, so let's get to the Huan Okamoto estimator. As I said, the quadratic estimator works like this, with a couple of multiples with some weights and averaging over them. So what Huan Okamoto did was they construct five separate estimators using different values of X and Y. Because as I said, told you, X can be temperature or X and Y can be temperature or polarization. And then you can make these T, T, E, E, T, E, T, B, E, B pairs out of them. And so what Huan Okamoto do is they construct these five separate optimal estimators. And then they combine them like this with where every estimator gets some extra, again, some weight. And these weights are determined such that this whole equation has minimum variance. So the variance on the final estimator is minimum. So it's a two-step process, like basically finding five individual optimal estimators and then combining them and again minimizing them. And does this work? Yes, it does work, and it works really well, in fact. So what I'm showing you here is the lensing reconstruction for a Simons observatory-like experiment, which will start taking data in very, very soon, in probably 2-3 years. So what we are seeing here is this is the signal we are after. This is, and this signal red in red is the lensing power spectrum. This is what we are trying to measure, and these different curves are showing us when you use different estimators, for example, TTEE or TE, whatever, this is the noise level with which you're going to measure it. So for example, if you look at L of 100, the signal is about 10 to the power minus 7. And you can say that if I use this black curve, I'll measure this signal of 10 to the power minus 7 with error of almost 10 to the power minus 8. So it has almost an order of magnitude of one order of magnitude noise lesser than the signal. So the so these colored curves are the individual TTE, TTB, EB estimators, and then the black curve is the minimum variance estimator, which is made out of the combination of these five curves. So this process works really well. But when you look at it carefully, we found a flaw in that. What it is, what the flaw is basically what Hu and Okamoto do is they consider the correlations between different XY pairs after integrating over L1 and L2. So basically, they first construct this individual estimator integrating over L1 and L2, and then they combine them. But what would be more optimal is to account for these correlations. So for example, accounting for correlation between TT and EE or TT and TE, etc. You should account for these correlations at each L1 and L2 and then integrate over it. So this is what we realized, that this should be done, and this has to be less noisy than Hu and Okamoto estimator. And in fact, you cannot do better than that. This has to be the best possible minimum variance quadratic estimator. And then we were really excited that we derived this result, but then we later found out that this result was actually derived in a small appendix of a paper in 2003, but it was erroneously described as being equivalent to Hu and Okamoto estimator. So they thought this is actually Hu and Okamoto estimator. But in our paper, in the next slide, I'll show you that it's actually not. But just to repeat again, the only difference here is you determine these FTT, FEE, these weights, such that this whole equation is minimized, not their individual parts, individual components. So that's a big difference. And as I told you, I'll show you that this works better than Hu and Okamoto. So in the blue here is I'm showing this lensing reconstruction noise from the Hu and Okamoto estimator. And in red, I'm showing the noise we get from the global minimum variance, this GMV estimator, that's what we call it, for a Simons observatory-like experiment. As you can see, at all the multipoles, it's smaller than Hu and Okamoto. And here I'm showing you the extra information we can gain out of it. And it goes up to 10% for Simons observatory-like experiment on some scales. So this is great. So this is basically having the same map, same information, but just utilizing it more carefully and getting more information out of the same maps. So this is great. And as I told you before, there are some other estimators which we use in practice, basically this SQE estimator. So there are lots of things happening in this plot, but I want you to focus only on this red curve. What this red curve is showing is the difference in the noise levels when you use this SQE estimator, which is used actually in the data analysis of the Planck and SPT surveys. And it's the ratio of that noise of SQE estimator to the global minimum variance estimator. So you'll find out that for Planck-like experiments, it's not a big difference, maybe of the order of 3 to 6%. But for an SO-like experiments, this can be of the order of 12% across all the multipoles. So this is really a significant improvement. And in future, this will motivate everyone in all the future data analysis to use this GMV estimator rather than rely on the SQE estimator.
I have a question.
Yes.
Is it much harder to implement this estimator? Are you providing a code to that, or can people use that very easily?
So I have provided a code, but my code actually works only in the Fourier space. So this is basically just the reconstruction space. But actually it is, let me see if I can go to that slide. It is actually quite straightforward to implement this code. Right here. So if you can see this slide, basically this is how you implement it. For Hu and Okamoto, you basically just have, now for GMV estimator, you consider all of this together. So X is basically a vector, this sigma is a matrix, and X is again a vector. And initially for Hu and Okamoto, you just have simple temperature and polarization. So the nice property about this this estimator is you can see it's separable in L1 and L2. So you can write this as a separate function of L1 and a separate function of L2. So it's really fast to calculate using fast Fourier transforms. So it's easy to implement, but the only sometimes there can be troubles because if you have cut sky setup. So for example, if you have different masks for temperature and polarization, then calculating this sigma matrix, which I showed you on the previous slide, can be a bit difficult, but it is worth going that trouble if you are going to gain this much of information. So it is possible. In fact, Planck already has this code ready now. I was talking with Anthony Lewis and they said that they have this code ready to calculate this thing. All right, I guess that's okay. So I'm going to move forward with the conclusions of this section, that this shows that Hua Nakamoto procedure is not the most optimal procedure, and GMV is the most optimal procedure, and they are not the same. All right, so those are the short conclusions for this part of the talk. Now I'll move on to the next one, which I told you before, which is basically a new probe of the high redshift universe. Wow. And using nulling CMB lensing with interloper-free limpair lensing. So it's a long title. And this work was done in collaboration with Emmanuel Shan at Berkeley and Anthony Pullen at NYU. So apologies for the really long title, but I promise I'm going to break it down for you into basically just two parts, high redshift universe and interloper-free limpair lensing. Now, before moving forward, there is this word LIM, which is going to pop up a lot of times. That basically refers to line intensity maps. And unfortunately, due to lack of time, I'm going to have to assume that all of you know what a line intensity map is and what are the problems with it, like interlopers. What are the interlopers of a line intensity map? If not, try to interrupt me when those things come up, and I'll try to explain as briefly as possible. Or otherwise, we have world-renowned experts in line intensity maps at LAM, and Ghislaine is one of them, and you can approach them at any point. So the first part of the talk, the high redshift universe, what do I mean by that? So if you want to go to high redshifts, let's say redshift 2, 3, how do you basically probe the high redshift universe? So we have galaxy surveys, right? We detect individual galaxies and map them. But this technique is efficient for mapping the universe, let's say around redshift 1.5 to 2 and less, smaller than that. But if you go to higher redshifts, it becomes really tough to use galaxy surveys because the galaxies become fainter, and there is a big cosmological volume to probe, which is not possible. So how do we trace this high redshift universe? So line intensity mapping is a technique which has emerged recently, which can be used to construct this density field at high redshifts. But it has its own problems and own sets of problems. So going to redshifts higher than 1.5 or 2 is very difficult. And in fact, going even higher to reionization, cosmic dawn or dark ages, that's even more difficult. It's almost impossible to probe the universe there. So can we have some new probe of this high redshift universe? And that's where the weak lensing again comes into picture, because as I told you before, weak lensing basically probes this matter distribution between the source field and the observer field. And in this case, the source field can be anything, the CMB or the line intensity maps or the galaxy surveys. So all of these sources, their photons on the way towards us, they get deflected and they undergo this weak lensing phenomena and their maps are distorted. So we can use them to reconstruct the mass between them and us. All right, so reconstructing the density field with lensing. As I said to you, this curve was for CMB. We can have similar curves for line intensity maps. Let's say we have a line intensity map at redshift 5 or a galaxy map at redshift 1.5. We can use weak lensing to reconstruct the mass between that redshift 5 and us, redshift 1.5 and us, because kappa probes the projected matter density. So that's great, but what if I'm asking questions like this? What if I want density field only between redshift 1 to 5, let's say, or only the only the mass above redshift 5, and I don't want anything else? Is it possible? So Galaxy surveys normally would have been really good tool for this, but they're too expensive and limited at higher redshifts. So this is where the nulling, so-called nulling technique enters. Now, if you were to naively imagine that if I take a lensing map from, let's say, redshift 5 and a lensing map from redshift 1.5, I can just subtract them, and I might imagine that then if I subtract them, what I'll get is only the matter from redshift 1.5 to 5. But actually, it doesn't work like that. If you look at these two curves, you'll see if you subtract them, the subtraction is not pure. Like you'll still be left with some contribution from the lower redshift. So unfortunately, you cannot subtract them. But this is the point when we observe, when we look at the shapes of these three curves. They have a very typical shape. And that shape is basically a second order polynomial in chi, where chi is this co-mowing distance for a given redshift. And this actually helps us, because what it helps us to do is we can combine three different curves, three different kappa probes, and mathematically construct a kappa field such that it has a zero response for below the smallest redshift kappa field. So for example, I have three kappa fields here, one from redshift 1, one from redshift 1.5, and one from redshift 5. Now I can mathematically construct a kappa field such that it has zero response below redshift 1. So what I'll get is contribution only from redshift 1 to 5. This is great. That was one of the things I was looking for. And then I told you the other thing which would be really cool to have is getting the matter field only above a certain redshift. So for example, if I want something about redshift 5, how would I do that? Now in this case, let's imagine I have a limb field at redshift 6, line intensity map at redshift 6, one at redshift 5, and then of course I have the kappa CMB coming all the way from the last scattering surface. I can combine these three such that the contribution from redshift 5 to 0, redshift 5 to 0 is null. There is no contribution coming from there, and kappa null only reacts to redshifts greater than 5. Okay, this is great. But I have been saying this limb lensing for a while now. Can limb lensing work? But unfortunately, it has its own issues. One of the issues is the limb field itself, like the galaxies which emit these lines at high redshifts, they themselves are non-linear and highly non-Gaussian because of how the matter evolves and how the gravity couples different modes. And that biases the signal, that biases the density reconstruction, which we do from limb lensing. Then there are other problems like foreground, continuum foregrounds, like cosmic infrared background or the dust in the Milky Way, which renders the use of line intensity maps very difficult. But there have been workarounds found around these problems. Different techniques or different estimators have been proposed. But what about the interlopers? So we found out that interlopers actually had never been discussed in the context of limb lensing. And we actually found out that we initially thought maybe they don't bias the signal that much. That's why the people don't discuss. But actually, I found out that it actually introduces a huge bias to the signal, which is basically the CL kappa kappa, the power spectrum of lensing, which we are trying to measure. So here, that's what I'm showing you. CL kappa XX, where X is the Lyman alpha intensity map at redshift 5, for example. And this is the signal we are trying to measure, the lensing power spectrum. And in this dashed curve and dot dashed curve, I am showing the something called the primary and bispectrum bias and trispectrum interloper bias. This is coming from the interlopers. And this is just a part of them. I'm not plotting the full, only the one halo part. So you can see they're already very significant compared to our signal. So this has to be considered. So limb lensing by itself cannot be used, and we need a new estimator to do this lensing reconstruction. And that's where we came up with this idea of limb pair lensing. As you can see, it involves a pair. So we have to select two lines. How do we select them? We select two lines for line intensity maps such that they have to lie at the same redshift, but there is a catch there. they have to be selected such that their interlopers, their respective interlopers, do not overlap in Redshift. So for example, the interlopers of C2, which are all these lines, and interlopers of Lyman alpha, which are all these lines and some others, they have to be separable in Redshift space. That is our only condition. So kappa xy, where x is C2 and y is Lyman alpha, could potentially work. That's what we thought. And then we plotted their bias. So there are lots of things happening in this plot, but just let's focus on only these two curves. This black curve, which is our signal, that's what we are trying to measure, CL kappa kappa. And this bluish looking curve, which is basically CL kappa, the bias to CL kappa xy. And this is what we thought would be zero, but actually we found out that even xy, this xy estimator is biased. The value is very very small compared to the actual signal, but it is still there. And you never know, with all the astrophysical uncertainties, this can go up or down by a significant amount. So we want something which has zero bias, right? And then we realized, if we do this kappa xy times kappa CMB instead of kappa xy times kappa xy, we get something with zero non-Gaussian bias, absolutely zero non-Gaussian bias, irrespective of all the modeling uncertainties. So this was great. So now we finally have an estimator which works. Can this be detected with future experiments? So we conceive an experiment where we consider 40% of the sky, that we are imagining that line intensity maps can be measured over 40% of the sky, let's say. And in that case, we could measure this signal to really high signal to noise, going up to 100, in fact. And different colors here represent the different Lmax values you could potentially probe. And that basically represents different angular resolutions you might need. And these, in fact, the angular resolutions are in fact very much within reach of the current experiment. So for future, this is a given. But this signal potentially could be detectable with really high signal to noise in future. But actually, this is not the signal I was talking about before, right? I was not talking about CLXY times CMB. I was talking about kappa, this kappa null. So we need this kappa null times kappa CMB, not this low redshift contribution, high redshift contribution. Can that be detected? So it turns out even that signal can be detected, which I'm showing you here in the solid curve, for different configurations of Lmax value. So this is great. For some configurations, you can detect it up to signal to noise up to 20, and for some up to 10, and so on. So This would be detectable as well, potentially in future. And this brings me to the conclusion of this particular section. It's that where we have shown that the interlopers cause non-Gaussian bias to limb lensing. It's quite high. And this has been quantified for the first time in our paper. Our limb pair estimator fixes it completely, and it is independent of any astrophysical uncertainties on the modeling of the power spectra of the line intensity maps. And the nulling technique allows us to access really high redshifts without any bias, which is really cool. And that brings me to the end of my talk. Thanks. Let me know if there are questions.
Thank you, Avi, for the very nice talk. Any comment or question? Or waiting for them? A curiosity in numbers. You shown you talked about you compare the expected signal and in light blue a signal which still presents some bias, some slide before this one.
Oh, sorry.
There, yeah, I said, well, the light blue line is not actually vanishing, so there is some bias. But anyway, respect to the solid black line, it's more than four orders of magnitude smaller. So is it a real issue or not? Why are you interested in actually nullifying? Exactly nullifying is not enough.
Yeah, that was my first thought as well. That why do we care about this if it's so small compared to the signal? But then we realized that when you do this, when you construct these biases, there are terms like CLXX and CLYY entering here in this bias calculation. And we have this problem in line intensity mapping that the models which predict the power spectrum of these lines, they have huge amounts of uncertainty related to them. And in like different models predict really different levels of these power spectra. And some models differ by 10 to the power 3 or 10 to the power 4, in fact. So this curve could really go up and down in any direction. Like, so we wanted something which is robust and for sure will give us zero, no matter what is your uncertainty. And that's what this kappa xy times kappa CMB does.
Mm-hmm. I see. Thank you. I have other questions and comments, but any someone else? No questions in the chat. No raised hand. So second question was mine. You're tailored on a Simon Observatory, right? Maybe this is the reason why you consider the 40% of sky coverage.
And
And what about the intensity mapping experiment? Which measurement are you foreseeing?
Well, for example, Lyman alpha is going to be measured by SPHEREx like experiment.
Yeah.
But I'm actually not sure how much percentage they're going to cover of the sky.
Yeah.
But we have pathfinder experiments for C2 or some other lines, which are, for example, Concerto is one of them. Although Concerto is going to, for now, it's going to focus, like they're really focused on a really small patch of the sky. But as I said, this is for the future studies. But I would like to highlight something again, that this is for the 40% of the sky. If you decrease the sky by, let's say, to 10%, like decrease it by 4 times, that this curves will only come down by a factor of 2, because it goes as the square root of the sky fraction, right? So instead of 20, you could still detect it with a signal to noise of 10, which is still high for such an important signal. So even with a 10% of the sky fraction, you could still detect this thing with let's say signal to noise of 10.
Okay, so, and this very high signal to noise is anyway on very small angular scale, so maybe useful for astrophysical studies, not for cosmology or not.
If you could detect the CL kappa kappa coming only from the high redshift part up to this L, like of 10 to the power 3 or something, I think that's really great, because that allows you to do a lot of things. You can, because this matter, this mass is coming only from, let's say, reionization, dark ages, and this cosmic dawn signal, right? So we can do a lot of science there. For example, because the physics is quite linear on such high redshifts, the modes are not coupled yet, and our linear perturbation theory works really well. So you can use this for neutrino masses, or the other application is during reionization. How much the density fluctuations caused reionization rather than the radiation fluctuations. So things like this could be really useful for that. So of course cosmology, astrophysics of course, but also a lot of cool cosmological results, because lensing contains a lot of information in about cosmology, and potentially also FNL and then some other cross correlation studies.
Okay. Thank you, Abby. So I have no more questions or comments. Is there any question?
No.
Maybe
Arturo has some questions, but
maybe Monday almost after lunch is not.
I'm not. It's a heavy topic, and I covered a lot of ground.
Okay, so if not, thank you, Abby, again. Let me advertise next week, Cafe Club, on Wednesday at 11 a.m. The speaker will be Thomas Reiprich from Bonn, talking about an almost 50 million light years warm hot emission filament crossing through the Hubble 3391 galaxy cluster system. That's it. Thank you.